go anywhere. I didn't realize it was like that, or that they had a version like that. If it was just like a stationary thing, it's like, what's the point of this? But if I could buy it and go anywhere and have coverage, that's what makes it worth it.
Dude, it like this.
The point of it is that it's like the coverage for the entire surface of the planet. You could be up somewhere in the mountains that you don't even have power up there, but you have your own gen set, you fire up your own power, fire up that satellite, and now you're connected to the internet.
Dude, the crazy part about Starlink to me is that like they already have over 4,000 satellites up, and their goal is to have 45,000.
Wow.
I'm like,
how many are in the GPS system?
Ooh, I don't know.
Does anybody know? That'd just be interesting.
I could Google it real quick.
Because like even GPS in the mountains doesn't always work because you're only picking up like one or two satellites depending on. But I guess if you're depending on Wi-Fi, you're not trying to triangulate. You only need one satellite.
Yeah. Welcome to Bitcoin Veterans, everybody. Here we are. we are talking about freedom and politics, but first, apparently, we're talking about Starlink. Oh, I'll tell you what. Starlink is one of the best damn arguments for all those naysayers out there. Like, what are you going to do when Bitcoin fucking crashes and there's no energy? And you're like, dude, you got a car, you got Starlink, you can do mobile transactions anywhere you want to if you got those two things. Like, that,
my answer to those folks is, you better be stacking ammo.
That too, right?
If shit's that bad,
You think your gold and silver is going to be the money that's used at that point in time? I believe you are deceiving yourself.
Yeah, 100%.
That bad where we have no internet? Oh, yeah. You got other things to be concerned about, my friend.
There are other types of precious metals that you're going to want to have on hand.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Around is around for a really good reason. You know,
hey, look, you could trade with ammo either through kinetically or just handing it to someone. I mean, it's tradable either way.
Yeah. I'm going to give you this first one for free. Welcome, ladies and gents, to Bitcoin Veterans. We are Bitcoiners. We are veterans. We talk about Bitcoin and veteran things. And today we are talking about freedom over politics, especially Bitcoin over politics, why it is, what we're thinking, some of the use cases out there. I am joined by this amazing crew, Mike Hobart, Alex Stanzik, Gabe, Jordan, aka Operation Libertas, all veterans in this space. And I'll tell you what, rolling on six shows, you guys realize if we complete one more show, we are in the top like 90% of podcasts that have ever been.
Oh, we're winners.
Oh, easy.
And we're already the number one Bitcoin veterans podcast.
You only have to do seven shows to be in the top 90, but that's pathetic.
Isn't that crazy? Like, that's how many people start podcasts and are like, nah, fuck this. I don't really want to do it. I don't have 3 million people following my show in the first, you know, six episodes. It's crazy.
I definitely would have quit after the first one or two if there weren't four other dudes counting on me to show up. So that's why I'm in this Cuban prison. Still here. Found a way. Had to bribe some guards. My butthole hurts, but it was worth it for you guys and everyone listening.
Segwaying away from Jordan's butthole real quick. to answer the question that you started off with, Jordan, as far as the number, looking at Wikipedia, it looks like there's around 100,000 satellites for GPS systems.
And so you said 4,500 for Starlink.
4,500 right now. Their goal is 45,000. Yeah.
Which, you know, less, you know, about half. But so maybe your coverage in the mountains isn't great. I forget how many you need for GPS. You definitely need at least two. I think maybe three. I mean, the more the better.
Yeah.
But maybe that's enough to cover.
But I think it also depends on their distribution, like their spacing around the orbit and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And fun fact for anybody who's out there that's looking to get a Starlink that doesn't have high speed or something like that. You can go into Starlink and you can order a Starlink, and instead of your home address in the coordinates where you live, put in coordinates somewhere in some BFE town or some, you know, place in Montana or Idaho that obviously doesn't have anything going on, and then use the ship to address as your home, and you should be able to get it, because they're a lot of times what they're doing is they're working from northern latitudes to southern latitudes for whatever reason. I actually just I've been on the list, I think, since early 2020. And just the other day, I got the confirmation that, hey, it's finally ready after, I don't know, four or five different delays for, you know, a few years. So that maybe a tidbit of knowledge to help people out.
When I guess, like,
knowledge. Go ahead.
Well, the land mass is only one third of the planet, so you don't need as many. I mean, they probably want some coverage over the oceans, maybe for ships or yachts or whatever, but that's actually a good, you know, you don't, wouldn't need 100,000, but you have to have the entire globe, including the oceans, covered for GPS for the military.
Yep.
So, I mean, those numbers make a lot of sense, actually. Hmm. It checks out. I approve it, Elon.
Great segue of all the military force projection and everything else into freedom and Bitcoin and how it absolutely is apolitical, doesn't care about your politics, maybe why it's better, and who's doing things out there. Jordan, you kind of brought this up after our last show. You said, hey, you know, why don't we do something about this in our politics? Because I think, you know, politics just kind of has invaded everything that we do. It's a lot like fiat currency, right? It's got its tentacles in everything these days. And you can tell, you know, how tyrannical a government is by everything that it touches. And so if it's got the fiat reserve currency, luckily it's dwindling, but it's invaded, you know, our lives and everything. It probably means that that politics is now touching all of our lives, but Bitcoin kind of doesn't care.
Yeah, I mean, one reason I thought we should cover this is because we've already covered some presidential candidates and we've covered some political topics. And I think it's just important for us to let our audience know, like, we don't really give two shits about what your politics are or if you're apolitical. Like, none of that really matters. Bitcoin doesn't care. It's money for your enemies, as we often talk about. So your political opponents get to use it just as much as you do, or people who are apolitical. So when we discuss politics, we really kind of take a look at it more from the freedom perspective. And obviously, because this is Bitcoin Veterans, from how Bitcoin as a tool and as a weapon, or however you want to characterize it, how it can be utilized to further freedom. So obviously that's going to touch on politics, because politics has always and probably will always touch upon freedom and try to encroach upon it. And it's our job to fight back. So really this episode, I think, at least from my perspective, is to just kind of hammer home to everybody listening. Like, we're going to talk about politics. We're going to have opinions on it, but it's largely related to freedom and Bitcoin. And if you don't like it, too bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And those are some good points, man. And it got me thinking about how the shift that we have seen in our culture, at least here in the States, of so much attention being on politics, just from, you know, just from normal everyday people who, you know, a generation before, you didn't see so much of it as an influence in our everyday lives. I mean, we've reached this point where, I mean, families are like, don't talk to each other, any family members, like, you know, they disown each other if they voted a certain way. There's such a, you know, everybody online is a political expert, and they, you know, back and forth everything that they are fed on the internet, which is, you know, it is what that is. But it's just an interesting shift that we've seen, where people tie more of their identities, their overall being, into their political ideologies now, in a way that, I mean, I was around in the 1900s, and back then I don't remember it being that heated.
I think we all were.
Yeah. But, I think actually my first election was back in the 90s, but, you know, it was like, you know, if you voted for a certain candidate, it was okay to, you know, to talk to people and not expect to have to, you know, go into a big defense or have a huge dialogue or justify it, or, you know, to shoot each other down or to talk trash about one another's ideologies. And, you know, I had friends that were voting for other candidates, and we'd talk about it, and it was fine. And we'd talk about why. And at the end of the day, if we didn't agree, that was fine. Okay, that's cool. You know, I hope my candidate wins and yours loses, and, you know, we're still going to be fine, and we're still going to be friends. We don't see that now. And it just makes me You know, and I think about how much of it is really, you know, they ramp it up and they want to get people personally involved and personally attached and intensely passionate about supporting the candidates that they do, because, you know, they need people obviously to push their initiatives forward. It just gets me thinking what the world would look
issues as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, people wound up. Sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah, no, thank you. But yeah, and that's what it does, man. I mean, it gets people connected on that deeper level. When really, I don't know. I mean, how much? I'm not going to get too far into our election system, but you have to ask yourself exactly, you know, how much does their vote count in many situations? But at the same time, I wonder what it would look like if more of the family and individual conversations that we were having were centered around something like Bitcoin. Imagine if people were as passionate about something like Bitcoin, the way that they feel about politics, the way they get enraged and fired up and disown people that they're related to. Imagine if people were that excited about Bitcoin, but in a unified way. Because I'm going to touch more on a little bit of that later. But yeah, I just wanted to bring up that shift that we've seen, and it's different. I don't see it changing very much. I see it as becoming more and more incendiary. And so for that reason, I'm glad that we're talking about this, because it is going to come up, and we will have individuals that are listening to this that, you know, are going to disagree. And I mean, obviously all five of us aren't going to agree on everything 100% either. But yeah, it's an interesting transition that we've been experiencing over the past few generations.
Well, and Gabe, I think there's also something to kind of, maybe we don't necessarily have to discuss it, but it is something that I wanted to bring attention to, is the fact that you're referring to individuals' political positions, not as positions, but they are approaching it as an ideology. Mm-hmm. It's like, politics is not a religion. It should not be a religion. Like, you should not regard your affiliation with any political party as some sort of with some tinge of religiosity. Like, it's just ridiculous, because every single political candidate is going to stand for something different. And they're like, I think it's just so foolish, like my entire life of just watching significant portions of the population to just be like, I only vote Democrat. It's like, okay, so you don't like to think is what you're telling me, because that's effectively the whole point. Is like, you're not trying to approach each candidate as an individual case. You're trying to just use it as an umbrella lump sum position to where you're just like, oh, they're always going to make the right decision because they're Democrat or they're Republican. It's like, that, no, that doesn't make sense. That's stupid.
Yeah. In fact, the smarter thing would be to say none of them are going to make the right decision.
Yeah. If
you want to make a blanket statement and not think, that would be the more accurate one.
Which is another great discussion topic, because people like we know, being in the military, like when you get into leadership, like especially getting up into like the commissioned officer levels, like when you're making decisions for large numbers of individuals, the capability for you to view each individual as an individual person versus a statistic prevents you from being able to make decisions that benefit the greater portions of the population. Like, people need to understand that. Like, you get up to a certain hierarchy of decision maker or leadership, and you have to disconnect from the humanity. Like, it's disgusting to think about, but like, it's a necessity. Like, you have to.
Yeah, that's why.
It's like, what Mike is getting at is, you officers suck.
Yeah, we definitely do. I mean, they definitely do.
I mean.
It's kind of why, like, there's the SOP, like, across the board for, like, an NBC environment. If you're in MOP level 4 and you need somebody to check to see if the air is, like, breathable, you take your lowest ranking dude, because you don't, he might be the smartest one in your unit. But, like, it's just like the SOP is, we're going to take the lowest ranking, least important person. And that's kind of how politics views you. Like, if we can
take their weapon,
throw
first.
Somebody, yeah, if we if we can throw somebody
for a little bit,
yep. Yeah,
if you
we're
survive
back to you if you survive
back to you later
without the ammo. But that's kind of like how politics is. Like, if they can use the lowest people that have the least amount of power and that are going to be most marginalized, like they're going to use you as cannon fodder to achieve their objectives because they're banking on the fact that nobody cares.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I guess maybe as a guy that spent a little time in politics, I'm not going to defend politicians, obviously. For anybody that knows,
if you don't know, Shane Hazel over there ran for governor of Georgia, right?
And Senate and U.S. House. So 2018, 2020, and 2022, I've run some pretty
masochist
major races. And I think a lot of what I wanted to do was just get on a stage and debate people. That was a lot of fun. And you're like,
fantastic.
The backside of that is, you know, when I ran, I didn't really think I had a chance of winning. It was more like, hey, we're going to go in here and we're going to just clobber some of these guys over the head with a constitution, kick them in the nuts as many times as possible and just show people, like, you know, there's a great scene in 300 where Leonidas is confronted with Xerxes there. And, you know, Xerxes comes up behind him with those giant hands and puts them on his shoulders. And he says, Leonidas, it could be all of yours. I will make you the warlord of Europa or whatever it is, you know? And when he says that, he's all you have to do is kneel before me. And Leonidas, you know, just kind of strides away a little bit, turns around and tells him how that's going to be a problem because he's got this, you know, nasty cramp in his thigh from killing all of his dudes. Right. And that scene where he says that, and then he says, and before this is over, they're even going to see that gods can bleed. And that was like, that was my whole thing. I was like, these are people. And I will tell you guys from, you know, having been behind the scenes with a lot of these people, especially the guys who were like out in front, the real politician, without their staff and without their donors and without the press and without everybody else, these are some of the dumbest motherfuckers on earth. I mean, and I mean that too, like most guys that I knew in the military, especially, you know, in reconnaissance, were way, way, way smarter than these guys. And they've set it up, you know, to your point, Gabe, is like there is, you know, politics has become the state religion inside of the United States. And all you need to do to really understand that is take a look back at, what was it, 2021, the summer of love that went around the United States, where cities were absolutely burning to the ground, you know, private property, mom and pop businesses, you know, a lot of the box stores and all of those things, they were burning to the ground. And, you know, the media, the politicians and the rest of them were like, yeah, you know, this is what we call protest and this is free speech and everything else. And then January 6th happens and you have, you know, this, you know, basically an unarmed mob goes into a Capitol, and the only person that gets killed is an unarmed lady, Ashley Babbitt, by, you know, one of the DC police officers that's, you know, the Capitol police officers working. What happened because of that? We saw an entire apparatus say, no, this is where free speech stops. This is where protest stops. This is an assault on the state religion. And that is so counter to what we've been, you know, what we've found, I think, here in Bitcoin, that I think for me, especially, you know, coming from that political realm, I saw it, you know, when I was really kind of like, wow, this is the weapon that we absolutely have to do anything. And once you get further down the rabbit hole, it doesn't matter where people came from. And I think that was the coolest thing for me is you start to see this unity again. You're like, man, I am tired of Democrats. I am tired of Republicans. Hell, I'm even tired of a lot of libertarians. And when you start to see people like that are unified behind a mission, behind one mission, going, this is it. This is the effort. I don't need to, you know, do any of this other stuff. I don't care what you do in your private life. This is it. That is something that is extremely profound.
Oh, Shane, I dropped a link in our chat for a clip if you want to play it. I watched it just a couple hours ago. It's of Megyn Kelly when she's on air stating that she realized that she thought that because of the title that Kamala Harris held, that she would be, you know, some sort of relatively intelligent, and she's realizing on camera, she's like, she's not, she's a fucking moron. You can play that if you want, but like,
yeah, I'm doing a share screen right now, so yeah, I'll pull it
How
up.
How sad is it? Somebody like in the corporate press who has been around that for so long. Maybe this is just her finally admitting it. Maybe she just realizes her audience is ready to accept it because Kamala's so bad. But like, did it really take her that long to figure it out?
Well, was this while she was still working for MSM, or was this after she kind of went off on her own? Because I've noticed that a lot of these folks, that when they're working in that system, they're a lot less likely to be critical of the power structure. And I mean, look, their paycheck depends upon them being somewhat polite.
Yeah.
Right. But when they leave, oh man, the gloves come off.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I've been looking for it, and it looks to be some sort of professional production, but it could be something like News Nation, like Chris Cuomo just pivoted over too. So I have no idea.
Well, I think she went out. She's got a podcast now, and I mean, I'm sure she's still doing it very professionally. I've listened to a couple episodes with certain people she's had on, but I bet she's got like a video or something. I'm sure it's like kind of Tucker on Twitter or whatever. It's probably real well done.
Yeah, true. Well, and it's like, it's just to the point. It's like, just because they hold a title, don't just assume that they are a capable or competent individual. There's a very high likelihood they can.
Competent, and but also, like, you got to realize that people are really subject to be believing things that may not necessarily be true.
Yeah, I mean,
if you look at what's happened with Tucker, man, he's completely like, holy crap, like, I did not realize how brainwashed I was. I'm paraphrasing the guy.
Yeah, that's a good point too. Like, and this gets back to incentives in Bitcoin. It's like, they weren't incentivized to look in deeply or to really reflect upon both themselves and their understanding and the quality of the individuals that they're holding in high pedestalized positions.
People are kind of, I think, upset because a lot of normal people can figure this stuff out a lot quicker. I think because we're operating at a quicker speed and we're not beholden to those power structures, but it's taken this long for like the alternative media scene to build up enough of an infrastructure for these people to peel off and still have as big or bigger followings. And people are starting to see, man. I think a lot of people are frustrated because it took this long. It's
way higher now.
Yeah. Like, I think 10 times.
There are like 96 million plus views. It's crazy. By the way, I want to make a quick observation. In keeping with our tradition, apparently, that we're forming of offending some part of our audience in every show, I wanna caution Shane Hazel when he's referring to Bitcoin as a weapon, because there's a lot of Bitcoiners out there who are very sensitive about that word. I mean, they get their feelings. You know, you got to give them a little hug and a little whoopee because they're very sensitive about this.
If they don't think the U.S. dollar has been used as a weapon, then I got news for them.
You know, this actually brings up an interesting topic that I'd like to just get into for a moment. And that is, during my first introductions to Bitcoin, I really was finding that there were a lot of people that tend to lean in more, you know, more of a conservative direction on the political spectrum, if you will, you know, whether it be, you know, towards the Republican side, libertarian side, and less so towards the left, towards the liberal side. But we're seeing a shift in that as well right now. And it's interesting, you know, you've got, you know, RFK Jr. coming out here and doing what he's doing. And we've already talked about that on length. So but he's, you know, he's a lifetime Democrat. And while he's not necessarily in line with, you know, the current atmosphere of the Democrat Party, I would say, and he's seen definitely as a rogue. He is a Democrat.
Is Gabe stuck in the matrix?
Uh-oh.
Oh. Yeah, back.
Am I there?
Yeah, you're back.
All right, cool. I'm not sure how long I was gone, so I'm just going to pick up where I left. I was just talking bad about RFK Jr. again. I'm sure he's an amazing guy. Love him. But I don't. So,
but I don't.
But we're seeing more of a shift towards progressives being more vocal about it. There's actually a book out. You guys may have seen it. It's called A Progressive's Case for Bitcoin. Meyer and Peter McCormick, he wrote the foreword for that. But we're seeing more of that now. And it's interesting how, you know, we're going to see it leveraged. You know, you talk about it being used as a weapon. I believe that there's potential for us to see it as leveraged as a political weapon as well. And it's going to, you're going to see the different parties on the different sides of the spectrum, I believe, weaponizing Bitcoin. You know, we've got an election year coming up. It's becoming a hot topic for the candidates that are in the front of that are in the front runners right now, that are the front runners. And it's going to be interesting to me to see how that works, because they are going to want to obviously get more votes by it. And so they'll bring it more into the conversation because they know there's a passionate group of potential voters that are involved there. But it'll be interesting to see what type of responses we see as each of them kind of, you know, ramp up their arsenal of the way that they're going to approach this and try to claim it as their own, when what necessarily we need to have happen and what I am hopeful will happen is that we'll see them see the different political ideologies be able to find somewhere in the middle where they can meet. And that middle point is going to be Bitcoin, where they can realize that it's not about as much of, you know, this ideology or this pedestal with a golden calf on it that we're worshiping and we want to elect because they're going to save our entire existence. No, it's more about, okay, well, we can agree on this because Bitcoin is what it is. Bitcoin is truth. And it's, you know, it is, if anything could be a common ground, I believe that is it.
You guys want to hear how dumb Megyn Kelly thinks the Veep is?
Yes.
Oh, dude, it's great.
Yeah. Here we go. Rock and roll.
I gave her the benefit of the doubt. I did not think she was an idiot. I now think she's a moron. She's not that smart. Forgive me. I'm still one of those people who gets wooed by titles. I'm like, she was the Attorney General of the state of California. You know, like, how dumb could she be? Like, dumb. The answer is very, very dumb is the answer.
Dude, so
wow. Okay.
That was at least three varies.
Tell us how you really feel.
I mean, do you realize? I mean, Megyn Kelly has access to all of these people, or had access to all these people at one point, right? Like, I mean, she's not new. She's no spring chicken. The fact that it's this long and she's finally like, oh yeah, she's a dumbass. Right? Like, yeah. She's a dumbass, and you're wooed by title. Like, you openly admit that you're wooed by titles as somebody who has been quote unquote a news anchor for as long as I can, you know, like for a long time, right? And you're just like, wow, you know, like Tucker. And I mean, this is something I think, you know, I reflected on as a, you know, as a quote unquote veteran when I was departing the services. Like, wow. What don't I know? Like, how, like, there's a time in your age, you know, like when you're in your early 20s and stuff like that, especially when you've done some real shit in the world and you're like, man, I know some stuff, but then you don't know some stuff about any of this. Right. And you're like, holy hell, I had to go through this giant revelation and it's still like ripping things out, you know, that, you know, the system like just kind of uploaded into you for decades and you're like, fuck, that was wrong, this is wrong, that's wrong, like everything that this apparatus uploaded into my brain, it's not only wrong, but it is absolutely 180 degrees as to what's actually correct or truthful.
Well, and it exposes that if in Megyn Kelly's position, it exposes that, in my opinion, that she had not had a single meaningful conversation with her ever. Because like when you have even like a remotely meaningful conversation with an individual, you pick up pretty quickly whether they have a particular level of competence or not. Like maybe that's a skill. That's probably a skill that most people lack, but it's just like, it doesn't take that much to realize that the person that you're dealing with is a fucking idiot.
Well, and it also speaks to the format, right? I mean, the format, that's why long form is just kicking ass, is because she's had these snippets of conversations with people, like, you know, whatever the latest outrage is for the day, whatever their, you know, political talking points are for that moment, give me 30 seconds to possibly 5 minutes. And, you know, that was that's all they ever had.
That is the format. That's all you ever get.
Yeah.
And it's easy, probably, to fake a bunch of shit for 30 seconds. To get somebody for 2 hours and you dig in, it's like stuff's going to come out, right? Yeah. We're going to see the real you. This is one of the reasons why I think Rogan has blown up, because that dude is so authentic.
Yeah.
But back to the point about, like, you know, these folks, these MSM anchors, and maybe not catching on to what's going on so much. I'm noticing this trend, though. If you think about it like this, you know, back in the day, it was Alex Jones that came out and started saying all kinds of stuff that was against.
They're turning the frogs gay.
Right?
And then he was right.
And they yanked that dude. They're like, you're out of here, bro. You can't say this stuff. You're not allowed. Right. So they booted him to the nether regions of the gulags of wherever. You're not allowed an MSM anymore. And what's happening, if you notice, with some of these anchors is after they leave the networks, the scales come off the eyes, so to speak, and they're like, holy crap. And then they start seeing what they're learning, and it's interesting watching them go down that rabbit hole.
Also, I mean, going along like the Alex Jones thing, like nobody has ever been canned or canceled or anything for saying stupid, made up bullshit. Like throughout the course of history, the people that have gotten their tongues removed were the ones that said something because they were getting a little too close to the truth and a little too close to exposing things. Not to say that everything that Alex Jones has said is correct, but a lot of them are at least close enough to correct to where they're like, he's let's cancel him while he sounds like a freaking retard, but he's like one step away from being right.
Icarus flying too close to the sun. You can't be saying negative things about the king. We chop your tongue off and chop your head off for things like that. Can't be doing that.
And we fine you $900 billion. Yeah. Isn't that what he was charged or something? That was for something completely different, though. But
yeah. I think it was $1.5 billion. But anyway, it's a lot of money.
Okay.
I mean, regardless, right? It's like he ain't Elon.
Well, and the whole like onus, kind of getting back to the whole Bitcoin topic too, is that like Gabe was touching on it earlier, and it's not just politics, but it's also economic, academic, and scientific collaboration by providing this one bridge as far as like a neutral asset. Like when you have a neutral asset, I think we've mentioned it in at least one of our discussions, or at least I shared my opinion that like the 2024 election is absolutely going to have at least one discussion topic around Bitcoin.
Agreed.
Because all of the parties involved, they have to have some sort of discussion point for it now.
Well, I mean, when you have Larry Fink and the rest of these, you know, institutional organizations that are now literally knocking on the door of the SEC, I think it's in their hand. Correct me if I'm wrong, but they're reviewing, and I've heard that they could mass, you know, batch, you know, pass the ETF for these things. When you have that kind of money that is now getting into Bitcoin, these guys must address Bitcoin. That is the one thing I will say. You know, don't give Bitcoin to politicians, obviously. No. However, this the ability for these guys to take a bunch of damn fiat or, you know, some, you know, saps, you know, Bitcoin and get on a debate stage in front of the world and start now addressing Bitcoin one way or another. I mean, that is a giant win from just even a couple of years ago for the Bitcoin crowd.
It is going to be very, what would be the word, vindicating when all the people that like this, what's his name? This idiot that last went on Squawk Box and got trounced by Joe, what's his face? Ben Kernan. Something.
Joe Kernan, yeah. CNBC, right?
Joe Kernan, but who is the other guy? Ben something, right? Start with McKenzie? An M.
Ben McKenzie.
Former terrible actor.
Former
terrible actor. I think he's still a terrible actor. Let's be honest.
Keep you're right.
But it's going to be vindicating when world leaders and potential world leaders or individuals that are vying for the spot, they have to have a serious and well-structured and thought out position and conversation points Bitcoin topic.
I mean, what happens when they get, when they start getting deep in the weeds, right? And their staffers are having to teach them stuff about Bitcoin because their opponent is going to ask them a question that they don't know the answer to.
Yeah.
Oh man, what happens then? That's
And I'm going to tell you that those guys study their asses off before debates. I mean, they really do. I remember my first debate, and that was the only time I really had a manager, right? And he's like, "All right, we're going to sit down, we're going to study." And I was like, "What are you talking about? I know this shit." And he's like,
"Did he know you were a Marine?"
Yeah, yeah. And he's like, "No." He's like, "You really have to like go in here and know this stuff." So we sat down, we studied, and I was like, "Yeah, you know, I'd say 80% of this I know pretty cold." However, there was that 20%, and I guarantee you that's going to happen. And when that comes up for a lot of these guys who haven't studied, it is going to be blindingly obvious who's done the depth and who's just kind of been like, yeah, these cliff notes are pretty good. Yeah,
that's a good point.
Well, you got to, it's essentially preparing for war, right? Like if you're going to go into battle and not prepare for it, like, oof.
You've got to know every attack, every way you can be attacked and how you can counter it.
I would think it's very similar to deliberations in a court of law, right? Like both sides have to, if you're going to be debriefed as a witness, you need to know which questions are going to be asked by the enemy team, right?
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see all of these speech writers and aides that are supporting the politicians. It's going to be interesting to watch them go through their orange pilling process, because you know, the more they study it, you know, I mean, Bitcoin, the truth of it is self-revealing, and so the more they dig into it, the more they're just going to find out the truth of it and then become involved in it themselves. So whether or not the politicians do whatever they're going to do, it'll be interesting to see that shift, just given the amount of energy that's going to go into studying it and becoming more familiar with it. And then, of course, each of them are going to, you know, continue talking to other people, and it just keeps on spreading.
There's one thing I wanted to bring up in regards to freedom is more important than politics, is that is like this comes to link it back to the last show we did. At the end, we talked a little bit about how some guys might be concerned that if they question the U.S. dollar, it questions their loyalty for this country and it questions their loyalty to the military and those kind of things. There's going to be active duty people who listen to this show, probably, who we don't want to give the impression that we're trying to say that this country is bad, because we're not.
Yeah.
Right? Like the whole thing about freedom is more important than politics. When it comes to the money, to me, the U.S. dollar is the politics. Right. The freedom is the United States Constitution. You understand that the United States Constitution and the United States dollar are not the same thing, right? I swore an oath to defend the United States Constitution, not the Federal Reserve.
Yep.
Right? Which, the Federal Reserve came much, much later.
Yeah.
And I would argue that the U.S. dollar as it stands today is almost all politics. This doesn't have anything to do with freedom, gentlemen. Well, so you get confused.
Well, like, said.
That's not the part that determines whether you're loyal to this country and to the Constitution of the USA.
Yeah, and this is for the guys in uniform now, right? Like if you've kind of gotten to that point as a, you know, as a veteran that's, you know, a little more comfortable with decentralization over the long term, right? Like that's a different thing. But guys who are actually wearing the flag on their shoulder right now, you know, and being told that, you know, if you support the dollar, then, or if you don't support the dollar, then possibly called a radical terrorist, you know, and that's something, you know, that could be brought up on treason. Per the United States Constitution, there's some mechanics that are very important, and this is for all those guys. Per Article 6, Section 2, that's the Supremacy Clause. And the Supremacy Clause, what you're told is, like, the Constitution is supreme, or the federal government is supreme to all the state constitutions. And that's absolutely false. There's a big but in there. It is not in standing with the Constitution itself, which means if there isn't a specifically delegated power to the Constitution, whether it's Article 1, 2, or 3 of those branches, and there is a simple quote-unquote law passed, or a judge offers an opinion, not a ruling, but an opinion that, you know, changes things, that's called an usurpation. And that's exactly what happened with the United States Constitution and the Federal Reserve. So when they passed the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, if you look back in history, This is an usurpation. So they passed in 1913, and what it does is it simply changes law, because in, I think it's Article 1, Section 8, Clause 5 of the Constitution, that's the power to mint coinage, right? That belongs to the Congress. You have to go through an Article 5 amendment, which is either two-thirds of the House and Senate or two-thirds of the states, to adopt a new currency or change the Constitution. And if they don't do that, it's notwithstanding, and that law is null and void of force. So for anybody that's in uniform, you can replay that as many times as you need to go back and study it, but that is the Constitution cold.
Well, and Shane, I was going to add on to what that was. Dude, do you like have all that stuff memorized first? Like that's freaking crazy. Anyway, yeah. What I was going to add on to what Alex brought up with that comment over like any currently serving that are concerned with like having an opinion or a position on Bitcoin being tantamount to treason. It's actually more patriotic to have our soldiers and our men and women in arms financially and economically defended from like any sort of calamitous outcome. Cause like, it blows my mind that people like, cause I've heard these positions pushed forward to think that it's some sort of negative for the average American to have the capability to save their wealth in something that is not the US dollar or not a standard investable asset. Like to have yourself protected outside of the system so that you don't have to become like another statistic is just like we should be wanting our men and women in arms protected to 100%. That extreme.
100%. Like so far as to say is get them paid in Bitcoin and get them, right? Like that'll never happen. I know Shane's over there laughing at me. I want to ask you, Shane, the thing about the supremacy clause, how does that square with the 10th Amendment? Because the 10th Amendment says that the power is not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, or reserved for to the states respectively or to the people. Meaning if we don't explicitly state that the federal government is allowed to do this particular thing, then that authority is reserved to the states and to the people. It says it right there.
100%. And what's great about the first 10 amendments, they were the first act of Congress, first and foremost, right? I don't think a lot of people understand history where the anti-federalists, the farmers, the craftsmen, the guys that didn't have the money, that weren't the politically connected or the tycoons. The tycoons and the bureaucrats and all those guys are the ones that wanted to centralize government under a constitution in the first place. So there was massive, massive struggle. This is where James Madison, the banker, comes in. And that's, or not, James, I'm sorry, not James Madison, for God's
Hamilton.
Sake. Hamilton. And they had to rewrite Hamilton's history with a play, right? Like this Broadway play. He's a great guy. And all. No, these guys were not the great guys. Like the great guys were the anti-federalists, in my humble opinion anyway. So when you look at this whole centralization thing, the first thing that the anti-federalists said, you will do this, or we're not signing off on this constitution, is you're going to adopt the first 10 amendments. And the catch-all at the end of these two is not only the 10th Amendment, but it's also the 9th Amendment. And the 9th Amendment is really kick-ass. And they put it before the 10th Amendment because the 9th Amendment states that all rights are reserved to the people, and they can make no law that denies you any rights that are unlisted, right? So along with Alex, these two catch-alls at the very end, hey, in plain English for everybody, if we missed any of this shit, by the way, people still reserve all the rights, and the states reserve all the powers that are not specifically listed. And there's a big difference, right? Is like as creators, let's just talk about this from a creation's perspective, right? There's a creator somewhere, there's intelligent design, whatever you believe. I don't care if you're an atheist or whatever, like there's intelligent design. So there's a creator of intelligence. We can't be greater than that intelligence. There's no possible way as human beings. So as human beings, when we put something together like a government, we are supposed to be greater than that. That a creation will probably never be, greater than its creator, if that makes sense. And so this was exactly the whole layout for this entire, constitutional republic, not a democracy, but a constitutional republic. And yeah, it all of these are reserved to the states and the people.
And in keeping with our tradition, we just carved out another small portion of our audience.
I'm good at that.
Fuck them. That's what I say.
All right. I don't care. Like, just
their brains are melting, man.
Well, let me try to reel some of them back in real quick. So if you're about to turn that off, pump the brakes for a minute. I think what we kind of need is like we need the enlightenment for the military. So like what I mean by that is we all, from the lowest ranking dude to the highest, all take an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. But most people don't know what they count on somebody else telling them what the Constitution means. Yep. So I think we need an enlightenment as far as at an individual level, NCOs and officers need to understand the Constitution personally and think through it at an individual level instead of handing off that responsibility to an authority figure. How can you put your life on the line for something that you don't personally understand? Mm-hmm. And I say this as it's not like I did this when I was in. I've kind of had some of these epiphanies now, and I'm realizing that's what I should have been doing. When a superior said, hey, we need to do X, Y, and Z, there's no reason I shouldn't be able to come back at him with, like, look, this is the thing we're defending. This is the Constitution that we don't have the power to do this. And we need to start looking internally and saying, we're not going to execute these things. What were you going to say, Alex?
Oh, I know what it was. Did it occur to you when you guys were swearing in? I'm curious. When you were saying those words at the part where it said foreign and domestic, did you think about that?
Oh, yeah.
Like that hit me like a, cause I'd not heard it before. And I'm thinking, and domestic. It really got me to think about it.
I was very happy I grew up getting exposed to the conspiracy theories around like the CIA and the industrial complex, thanks to my dad. Cause I had a very good understanding that there are plenty of enemies. We'll call them wolves in sheep's clothing within our own borders.
I think it was Lincoln that said that if the United States falls, it's going to fall from within.
Yeah,
absolutely.
A house divided.
Well, and to your point, Alex, I mean, you know, if you were to look at, you know, if somebody were setting up an oath today, do you think any of these idiots, domestic enemies? What are you talking about?
Soldiers repeating that shit.
Oh man, that's not even an option. You kill those guys that we point at over there. You don't kill anybody. You know, you don't go after anybody here in the United States, for God's sakes. You can't rout out anybody.
Just the fact that we're able to say this is interesting if you think about it. And it's because of the First Amendment, which grants us our freedom of speech. And I watched RFK Jr. say this before Congress the other day. You know, they're having that congressional hearing talking about the censorship of people on social media. And RFK Jr. gets in there and he goes at him. That was an amazing clip. Yeah. Whether you like him or not.
There was applause.
What he said was amazing. And basically that once you start down that road to censorship, once you're censoring people, I mean, never in history have the good guys been the ones censoring. You can't point to a single government that's ever done that turned out to be the good guys.
Yep.
Ever.
And that's the road to totalitarianism, to despotism, to tyrannical rule, to the loss of your freedoms.
Draconian measures.
And just to dip my toe into politics real quick is I think a lot of times the left looks at defending the First Amendment like the way that Alex described it, whereas they need to understand that a lot of times the right looks at defending the Second Amendment for the same reasons. It's never been the good guys that have come after it. And instead of fighting each other on like this right's more important than this right, we should be like, these are all of our rights. We should all be on the same page defending our rights. Why would we say like, oh no, certain people shouldn't have this, but we'll leave this to the government. They should be the only one with this right. Like Alex said, that's when has that ever worked out?
It also comes down to this idea that we're even arguing over the rights.
Yeah.
Now right. If you recall, when the founding fathers were creating these documents, they were literally saying that these rights are obvious to them at the time. They were obvious that we're all created equal, and these rights are given to us by God.
Yeah.
Which was, in their view, obvious, right? I mean, that's so obvious anymore. The people have lost track of this argument. A lot of people think that the Constitution is there to remind us of what our rights are. No, it's not. The Constitution is there to restrict the government from infringing upon our rights. Those are two totally different things.
Well, let's take a look at these two real quick, because I mean, this just happened.
No right given to the people of the United States is absolute, and that includes the right to free speech.
Protective measures were taken to take down disinformation about vaccines and about the nature of the virus and about protective measures we could take, including masks, including social distancing.
We are not trying to censor speech. We are simply trying to create factually correct information to prevent harm to people.
It was public measures to protect lives. Again, something should be celebrated.
Celebrated, guys.
For your own safety.
Okay.
The lizard lady in the beginning, she's basically trying to make that same argument that we get to decide as humans what rights you're allowed to have. So the problem with that is which group of humans decides.
And right. They think you're so fucking stupid that you can't digest information and tell what's factual and what's not factual.
Well, Shane, like, firstly, this disinformation word is a fucking stupid word. Like, yeah. We need to stop using it, because there's information and it is either false or is correct. Secondly, to the point of that woman being an idiot, she also doesn't understand that science is an art form and there's a lot of guess and check. So like when all that bullshit was first starting to go down, people were expecting science to come out and have the exact perfect answer immediately, when like within a couple weeks or a couple months. You guys are all idiots. Like, there's a lot of like guess and check work to figure out what works and what doesn't. So that's not necessarily misinformation. That's just information that we thought was true, and it was an opinion.
The lizards want them to be the ones.
Yeah.
Who say what is factual and what not factual.
Well,
so I'm going to read you a quick quote and I'll let you go. Quote from Bastiat, The Law. If the natural tendencies of mankind are so bad that it is not safe to permit people to be free, how is it that the tendencies of these organizers are always good? Do not the legislators and their appointed agents also belong to the human race? Or do they believe that they themselves are made of a finer clay than the rest of mankind?
So, and this also kind of touches back on a couple other spaces conversations I took part in yesterday, where the topics were politics and then masculinity and manhood, which is like perfect for what we're talking about right now. But the point was that I brought up in both of them was that I think that the reason that these lizard people, these morons that are trying to violate First Amendment rights to try and push out whatever they believe is true, is that there's a large portion of the population that has gotten away from the study of philosophy and the capability of structuring rational arguments and being capable of debating. Because it goes back to the fantastic RFK speech we were talking about, where he brought up that exact point. It's like, people are not capable of not only positioning a well-structured argument, but they're not emotionally or cognitively capable of being able to have an exchange of idea between two or multiple different parties where people are disagreeing, but it's not you're not necessarily thinking that like the other person, you know, deserves to go to hell because they hold a different position than you. Because if you don't have that very like that basis, that foundation for a country or like a town hall kind of setting to where you can have honest deliberation and communication to figure out what is true and what is not, then you're fucked. Like there's no coordination that is capable of happening.
Well, it's not just that. It also gives license to basically do anything they want.
Yeah.
Because if you're saying the bad words, See, this is where trying to criminalize speech is. This is where it comes into play. Because if they can start criminalizing certain types of speech, now you're walking down that road to one group of people being able to say, oh, those people are criminals.
Mm-hmm. Witch hunts.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the danger that, we're in right now. And I was hesitant to go here, but I'm going to anyway.
Let's go. Do it.
That's where the danger is in this mindset that we're living in now of, you know, live your truth. Ugh. Okay. There is no your truth. There is the truth. And then there's everything else. And, you know, we may see the truth or we may disagree with the truth or we may agree with it, but it doesn't change the fact that it is what it is. The inalienable rights that we have received, you know, you can't change that. It is what it is. It's like you said, Alex, that it's obvious to the writers of that document that, you know, these rights are, I mean, it's self-evident, man. I mean, they are obvious. These are the rights that we have been given by our creator. And it's not up to people to decide which of them we can, you know, put a pause on because, you know, or for our safety or it's for your own good. We're saving lives here. That's ridiculous. And we all know it. But it's being pushed forward culturally through the your truth mindset, which is ridiculous. And it's interesting to see. I'm really paying attention to what the political conversations are shaping up to be. And it's going to be interesting to see each of them try to, I believe they will attempt to make it appear as though, you know, they're on the side of Bitcoin or Bitcoin is on their side, and they will try to skew the truth of that, and they'll try to do it with Bitcoin, but it's not going to work because Bitcoin has its, I mean, Bitcoin is the truth. Okay. It is what it is. You can't go in and say, you can't manipulate it. You can't change it. Similar to, our God-given rights, the rights that we have as human beings that we have been endowed with. Bitcoin is the same. It can't be changed. It can't be manipulated. It can't be taken away. And it's going to be interesting and somewhat entertaining to watch political movers and politicians and candidates smash themselves against the rocks of Bitcoin while they try to go in and manipulate it for their benefit, because they will fail and they will have no other option but to conform to the truth of it, which is that it's not theirs to control, it's not theirs to manipulate, and it's not theirs to use to serve their agendas. So it's going to be interesting.
It brings up a thought that I kind of had earlier. Yeah, I was going to say really good, man. Brings up a thought in terms of what we were saying earlier is like with these staffers and people who are speaking into the ears of these guys, like, hey, you're going to have to learn this. You know, there's that saying, you know, obviously when a country goes broke, it's suddenly at the end, right? And that might be part of the hyper-Bitcoinization, right, is where these staffers that are learning Bitcoin start to figure out a lot of what we've already figured out, right? Is like, hey, politics is really not the lever you need to change the world. This right here, this truth, this thing that runs SHA-256, and that's all that it does. It doesn't care about your leaders and all that. Like this, when this starts to, you know, infect the brains of the people who are politically connected, who are, you know, working there, and they have to learn all this, the attrition that I think we're going to see from that when, you know, these guys go, God, man, I work for a fucking idiot, or I work for a monster, or like whoever it is that they work for, right? And they have to educate these people, and whether they get it or they don't get it, they're for it or they don't for it, you're going to see probably mass rotation in some of these spots, you know, chiefs of staff, possibly the staffers that, you know, make everything happen and run around. That is going to be something really amazing. And as they're, let's just say, you know, as fiat continues to replace the people who are leaving because Bitcoin is obviously a better tool for freedom in the first place, or a better tool for live and let live and a better way of life, these people that are going to come in that aren't into Bitcoin, that aren't taking, you know, the orange pill, that haven't done the study, this is going to negatively affect not only themselves but those politicians, to the point where they're going to be absolutely so incompetent and so behind the power curve that Bitcoin is, you know, they're forging, that it's going to hasten this decline of the empire at a much faster rate, which, you know, it feels like we're in free fall right now, but I mean, this is like, you know, putting on jetpacks and screaming towards Earth head first as fast as possible.
I'm looking forward to I hope that there is at least one great piece of evidence or like video evidence of a politician receiving that pushback on the 20% that they don't understand to where they look like an idiot. I hope we have that captured on video, whether it's like national television or whatever, to the point of where we start to see like the revelation hit them and the atom bomb go off behind their eyes where they're like, oh fuck, this is big. Just, we all go through it.
Yeah, I mean, imagine that making the headlines and going viral from the Bitcoin community alone, just like the head of Satoshi, you know, with Greenpeace, right? I mean, yeah. when somebody screws up that pooch in that epic of a form, and then it gets, you know, a hold of, you know, Bitcoin Twitter, like, watch out, man. Jordan, you want to say something? You have your hand up? You're raising your hand? Like, hey guys.
No, I was waving at my wife and kid as they drove by. I mean, you know me. I always have something to say. But if somebody else has something, they can go ahead.
Nope.
I don't give up the mic very often, as you guys all know. So here we go.
There was a really good quote by George Washington. If freedom of speech is taken away, then dumb and silent, we may be led like sheep to the slaughter. I mean... Oof. Yeah, fairly apparent. I mean, you're looking at myocarditis right now and everything else that's, you know, prevalent in 18 to 40 year olds. It never was before. It's crazy.
Weird how that happens.
Shane, say that quote again.
If freedom of speech is taken away, then dumb and silent, we may be led like sheep to the slaughter.
So yeah. That walked like right into what I was going to say. I think throughout history, so like, I mean, for those who don't know, like I studied history and I've always really been into history, and history is really about like patterns a lot of times and just kind of picking up on these different patterns. And one pattern has always been how to censor speech to one degree or another, whether that was removing someone's tongue, like was mentioned earlier, or jailing them for saying the wrong thing or labeling it misinformation. And what it keeps pulling away from are those sources of truth. Mike mentioned earlier how we've really gotten away from like studying philosophy and stuff like that. And I've recently started reading some Voltaire just because I was like, this kind of goes back talking about liberty a little further back. And I feel like there's a lot of these Enlightenment thinkers who have been forgotten about because we keep getting peeled off in these other discussions, and that is just the current regime's way of keeping us away from some texts that are out there that really hit home on the truth. Like Alex mentioned earlier, Bastiat's The Law is just beautiful and amazing and just so accurate you can't really argue with it. And you could read people like Voltaire who get into like talking about religion or just really make fun of the state. And then to tie that back into like how our rights work and stuff, when you look throughout history, first it was like the nobles. It wasn't just like the king was all powerful. He granted rights to the aristocracy. And that was how he could keep them controlling his country and doing things the way he wanted. He had to give them some amount of power, like murder. And when a progressive regime came across, they would say like, hey, I've read some of this work, you know, maybe we need to outlaw murder. And the aristocracy would push back and be like, no, you can't. That's our right. Is the state going to also get rid of that right? And of course, the state never gives up the right to murder you, but they will convince you that you are immoral if you do it, but it's totally moral and justified when they do it.
Can't murder them back.
It's
a state religion.
And so a lot of like, I feel like I've never heard this before. Maybe somebody else has said it, but I'm going to try to coin this phrase. Neo-enlightenment, I feel like, is what we need. We need to like return to that, going back to some of like the philosophers and some of the people that really kind of get back to the roots of freedom and start tapping into their knowledge that they've discussed hundreds of years ago. And it's like we've forgotten it and we're having some of these same arguments all over again because the people in power are trying to drive us back into a dark age of not understanding some of this literature.
We can call them neons. Oh, we should totally beam that.
The neons. I like that, man. Really, that's really good. Just shining bright in history. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's why I was a marketing manager, guys.
I really like that.
It also plays well with anons. Anon neons.
A lot of the neons were anons, for that matter. I mean,
Voltaire is a... So that kind of ties back into what I was saying. Like, they're trying to tell people that being an anon on Twitter is like, why are you hiding behind that? And it's like, people always did that because if they told the truth and the king knew who they were, they'd have their head removed.
That's what Galileo did.
So there's a reason why we're doing it even now is because there is a threat. We can't just say this without risking something.
Mic drop.
I lose everybody.
Yeah, that was it.
Yes, you lost all of us. We can't hear you at all.
I was actually looking for a list of the here's a few of them. I mean, when you look at who wrote the Anti-Federalist, right? These guys didn't want to be known. Like to your point, Brutus, Cato,
they wrote anonymously.
Yeah, they and even then a lot of them were destroyed.
Do-good letters from Ben Franklin.
Yeah, they died penniless, and you know their fortunes and farms and everything else were destroyed because these guys with chips on their shoulder and the aristocratic class, they call them the aristocratic combination. I mean, that was their name for them back in the day. You know, whether we're calling them counterfeit class or what, they called them the aristocratic combination. It was the bankers, it was the tycoons, and it was the elite bureaucrats. That's them. Still
sounds pretty similar.
They're still destroying people as fast as they fucking can that speak out against them.
Well, and there's also power in anonymity. If it takes away, you know, the humanness of it, then it gives more of a, I guess it removes that, you know, the possibility that they could, you know, that they have those human fallibilities as well. You know, if it's an anonymous person, then, you know, look at, you know, Satoshi Nakamoto, for goodness sake. I mean, you know, there's so much mystique and mysteriousness around that.
I was actually thinking like Batman.
Yep. Yeah. But it's, I mean, you know, there's a mystique to when I first learning about the Bitcoin story and I heard that part, I'm like, come on, man. You know, is this a movie that we're talking about here? You know, you've got this mystery guy. Yeah, so I'm like, come on, this can't even be real, man. This is a, you know, somebody's telling me about a video game or something that's coming out, but it does something. But there is power in that, and I think for a lot of people that approach things like this or even you know, back in the day, it can be almost freeing to them and open up different avenues and different mental faculties that they may keep closed when they tie their own identity to it. When they approach things from an anonymous perspective, you know, they kind of take on that larger identity and step outside of the confines of yourself. And that can influence your message that you bring out to other people when that message is developed on a scale that is bigger than just our own perspective, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think another thing you danced around a little bit, Gabe, with the anonymity and Alex chiming in with the Dark Knight, I'm Batman kind of input. when you have the anonymity and you establish yourself as a symbol or an idea, it takes away the possibility of using your own human fallibility to attack the idea or the cause that you're like contributing your efforts towards, which is the core reason why so many of the Bitcoin detractors are so interested in trying to find out who Satoshi Nakamoto was, because they want to find some sort of character flaw where they can use that as an attack on Bitcoin itself.
Well, didn't Jamie Dimon just do something like that just the other day when he was being interviewed in Davos? He basically, I'm going to paraphrase, he was like, yeah, isn't Satoshi Nakamoto going to come out someday later and be like, ha ha ha, it's not 21 million, it's 50 million.
Yeah. We could prophesize that kind of crap like into infinitum, Jamie. Like, yeah, we can all do that. We could all do that about your stupid banking system or like oil and gas or whatever you want. Like,
should we do we have time to address?
Or you could
that?
Just read the code.
There we go. Thank you.
109. Let's go.
People who don't know why, you know, Satoshi or anybody else can just say, haha, I tricked you. It's actually, we're going to change it to 42 million now. Why can't that happen? You guys know?
Yeah, it's written into the Shaw 256. There is 21 million forever. Everything is going to be divided by 21 million Bitcoin. You can divide it further, but you cannot increase the number. Obviously, being good, sound money or hard money being hard, debasement is probably the first thing you have to be aware of. And that can't happen in Bitcoin. Anybody that wanted to try to do anything like that, they're going to get isolated as a node. And if they continue to push, it's going to cost them trillions and trillions of dollars to pull off what one double spend. And then at the end of that, they've still failed and they've forked it and they're going to be Bitcoin Cash, which is, I don't know, probably hovering right around.
Well, Shane, the point is that for an easy analogy for people to get at, and I kind of stole this from Alex from the very, very early days before Cafe Bitcoin was a thing. The concept is that you can continually divide the 21 million, but you can't make more. So it's like starting with a pizza and you're not going to get any more of this single pizza, but you can continually divide it into smaller and smaller chunks. But that doesn't increase the total amount that's capable of people being able to like acquire. Like you can get down into like
extend the decimal position out further.
Yeah.
You still have 21 million.
Yes.
Right. Changing the decimal position makes a smaller,
which
use.
Means
like
which
you
means
can make
you
100
can,
out of a sat.
Yeah, you can essentially get more satoshis if you want to think about it that way. Or they would, in honesty, they would probably get to the point of dividing it into some other level of denomination or something like that, so it's not so confusing. But yeah, that's an important distinction for people to understand. It's like the pie is like not changing.
When you could equate a satoshi with a dollar. Now you can think of something smaller as the cents that make up a dollar.
Yeah. Which would be that's my point is like, you'd have to name it something else just so people can grasp it. Otherwise it is kind of like, it does get a little confusing.
All right, let me make two quick points on this subject. So to speaking directly to like what Jamie Dimon said is he was trying to infer that we don't actually know that this is hard coded and can't be changed. Like anybody can do this and it's possible to do it. So two parts about that. Number one, as Jordan said earlier, it's open source. Anybody can look at it. And at this point, probably tens of thousands of coders and developers have looked at it, right? You can see every single line. We would know if there's some backdoor way for Satoshi to sneak up on us and make it
#open source.
Yeah. Right. So that's what open source is. Like Jamie Dimon should just investigate that part first. Jesus. The second thing is, like, look, just because you can change the rules doesn't mean other people are going to use it, right? So the fact of the matter is, because it's open source, we could change the rules. Like us five could get together and we could go, all right, we're going to make veteran coin and change a couple lines of code and like give it out for, you know, open source to the internet, right? The problem is, who's going to come leave the Bitcoin network and play on our monopoly board? It's just not going
to
happen.
You'd have to be a moron.
Yeah.
We're not going to want pogs. We will sell you pogs for your Bitcoin veteran coin.
Pog coin. Oh, man.
Oh, boy.
Gabe is going to wreck everybody because he's got a fucking stack of them.
It's on, man. It is on.
Serious question. Were pogs named after pogs, or is that one of those things that.
Well, or were they named after fat ass white girls?
Somebody put them in timeout. Oh,
yeah. Thank you for joining us today, everybody. Just left.
Hey, pogs need loving too.
They let you do anything in that Cuban prison, don't they?
You're just dying for a pog over here. Jeez. I'm so sick of Pedro. Shit.
Oh, all right, so we've covered. I think we've really. I mean, you guys have killed the subject. I mean, I didn't know, you know, from the beginning, like, which direction when this was going to go. I appreciate the kind of some of the things that have kind of just kind of drifted to the top of this conversation. Freedom of speech being one of them. You know, and then anonymity. And, you know, when we're looking at, you know, history and these, you know, guys that we talked about earlier, the neons, right? The neon anons. You know, this seems to be one of the things where you can have more speech that is anonymous. That seems to be a winning combination for at least, you know, kind of going to battle with these idiots. And, you know, one of my favorite things with that is memes, right? Like, most memes, unless you're branding your own meme, is going to be an anon kind of thing. And I mean, virtual metadata, if you don't know about metadata and you're trying to be anonymous, maybe learn that piece first. But yeah, you know,
use memes
are a fantastic way. Do you guys have any memes come to mind that I can pull up for the end of the show here with free speech or any of that kind of stuff? Maybe we should probably do this beforehand. Probably a better
thing. No, let's fuck it, let's do it live.
But I really do. I think, you know, this anon thing, on top of you know, free speech is absolutely the way to go for establishing more freedom.
I agree. I don't know. Like, I don't have any. I have nothing to add on top of that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What are you guys into this weekend? I mean, Jordan's on vacation. I'm taking off for vacation here shortly. You guys got anything going? Personal lives good. Everybody's great.
Man, I'm already there, dude. I'm on the beach right now.
Is that right? Where, you don't have to give out your exact location, but where are you at?
I'm in North Carolina.
Right,
yeah,
on.
Man. Yeah, loving it, dude. It's nice. Hot outside. Getting ready to back out there and cook a little bit more. I did just want to wrap up a couple of thoughts about our discussion real quick. You know, we talk a lot about the truth. At least I know I brought it up a few times, but and there was a quote that I was, you know, I don't know if you guys, if you stay at a beach house, you know, and they always have this whole, like, all the different books that people leave behind over the years. And that's one of the coolest things to me about renting a beach house is just going through the books and seeing what they've got. You know, they've always got some Tom Clancy going on. And I found a book today, and it was like the most, you know, the most famous, amazing speeches of all time. And I was, you know, they had Patrick Henry in there and his, you know, freedom or death speech. And there was a line in there. And the line is, whatever anguish of spirit it may cost, I'm willing to know the whole truth. And it just hit me. I mean, it jumped out at me. And I was like, that's amazing, because it's like I mentioned earlier. I mean, Bitcoin is truth. It is. It's just, I mean, it's not the only truth in the world, but I mean, there's nothing disingenuous about it. It's verifiable. It's there. It is truth. And to me, I believe that all true freedom is rooted, is grounded in the principle of truth. And without it, we don't have actual freedom. And I'm glad that we're having this discussion, because I believe that it needs to be in our minds and in the minds of anyone who listens to this, that as we continue into this political landscape, which is, it's going to be messy. We know it's going to be a nasty year with the elections coming. It's going to be a knockdown drag out, and they're going to want everybody to get fired up, and they're going to want you to be outraged by everything that happens. And it's going to be intense, but I believe it's interesting that, well, I'm going to start that sentence over. I just want to encourage everyone within the sound of our voices right now to maintain a perspective of truth, of actual real truth, and what it is and what it means to our freedom, and the reality that the political ideologies that we're going to be drowning in over the next year and a half, they're not the truth. It's mostly bullshit, and don't get too wrapped up in it. If you want to find something right now that really is true, that you can dig into and dive into, and especially for our fellow veterans and service members, man, if you want to find something to get plugged into that has a purpose, that is a worthy mission, that is founded in truth and truly does have an impact on our freedom as individuals and as humans in general, start studying Bitcoin. Get in there, dig into it. The truth inside of it is self-evident, and it will be it will reveal itself if you look for it. And that I'm just going to leave it at that. And as soon as we're done, I'm going straight out to the beach. I've got a delicious bottle of bourbon, and I'm going to do my best to get rid of it tonight. So there you have it.
Golly, Gabe. I mean, Jesus Christ. You're just one of the most inspiring stoic guys I know. I love it. We're going
to
try
to keep up with this group, man, because you guys are freaking high caliber.
We're kind of closing this thing up. You guys can kind of throw it around and have some parting thoughts here.
I was going to say something, but I think I've put everything out on the table that I would want to have said as far as like without having the capability of freedom of speech, like we have nothing. And I will say that I've written a lot about this for Bitcoin Magazine, but like kind of dovetailing off what Gabe was just speaking on is that when you have an economic constant, which is Bitcoin, which is something that we've never had before ever, and we've said it ad nauseum, and those of you that are going to be consistent listeners, you're going to have to get used to it because we're going to say it over and over and over again. Like there has never been anything like Bitcoin before. And because of its neutrality, because of its geopolitical neutrality, not just political neutrality in America, but globally, it allows for an exchange of fact and idea and economic power and capacity that seeks out the most efficient exchange rates as far as like pricing mechanisms. It seeks out the best ideas as far as like providing solutions, because that's where the money goes. Like when you have money that is not manipulated, it literally gets attracted to what is performing the best job for the least amount of effort. That's one of my favorite things as far as like getting into Bitcoin and understanding Bitcoin mining and energy, is like understanding the relationship between the finances and the energy generation and the innovation and the exchange of ideas and the freedom of speech. Not even touching on the UFO topic that we were kind of looking at last time. Like, you guys better like strap it, like get a couple seat belts, maybe even like a racing harness, because the innovation, like once this stuff catches fire, the innovation is going to be absolutely fucking unbelievable. So just get ready.
Jordan, you ready?
I am ready. Right as a truck was driving by. Dude, I am ready. I am ready for this innovation. The thing that I'm, I guess, both looking forward to and dreading in a sense is that like we're some of the first movers in this space. And I know we're some of the last ones compared to other people that are in it right now. But, you know, I'm looking forward to the day where there's even more and better people that are spreading the message even better, or they elevate our game so that we get better at spreading it to you. This episode was about how freedom is greater than politics, and so I don't even want to talk about the politics thing for the rest of the show. I'm just going to talk about freedom. Like right now I'm out here, I'm on vacation, I'm going to hang out with my family right after this. I'm going to drink like Gabe and try to finish off a bottle of bourbon. I'm going to smoke a little pot. But what I really looked forward to was just sitting here in this beautiful weather, talking with you fine four gents and whoever's out there listening to us. Like I'm super soaked to be talking about freedom. I've got Bitcoin is Venice and two copies of Voltaire that I'm going to tear into while I'm here. And I'm just looking forward to expanding my mind and expanding my reach by talking to you guys and hopefully amplifying our message to get it out there to more people so we can keep spreading freedom.
That's awesome.
All right, quick comment. I was listening to Breedlove talk to Peter McCormick about this the other day, and it resonated. And it's the whole thing about, like, if you don't own the product of the fruit of your own labor, then are you really free? And it was a really great clip. We played it earlier today on Cafe, and I encourage you guys to go look it up if you haven't seen it. But man, that's it in a nutshell. We're living in a system today that is currently extracting the fruit of your labor away from you, your time and your energy and your productivity, and transferring it to other people. Don't work for something that somebody else, some other man, can make for free. And that's the system where we've grown up in. But now we have a way out. We're way off of that train heading for the chasm, in my opinion. And that's Bitcoin.
Awesome. Man, Bitcoin Veterans is such a cool thing to be launching here, guys. And if any of you guys are, you know, political monsters still, right? Like, and I will tell you, like, I was a absolute political monster. It was one of those things that I studied relentlessly. It's just one of those, you get going down a hole and, you know, next thing you know, you may be running for an office, you know, or possibly having a fight with some of your best friends or your family, like we talked about in the beginning of the program, right? And like, man, maybe they never want to talk to you again. Maybe you never want to talk to them again. This season, now that we're already coming into the 2024 election season, I would challenge, and this is it. This is a challenge to anybody who's listening to the show, and a challenge to you guys is put it in as many veterans' hands and many active duty hands as possible. My challenge to you guys in this time is pay more attention and do more reading and listening and in just enjoying of Bitcoin from now till the presidential election than you do with politics. And I guarantee you, there are a lot of things that are first going to happen. You're going to get educated on economics. You're going to get educated on the different theories of economics. You're going to get educated on who really, really pulls the strings in this world. You're going to see how relationships around the world have developed, how people have moved armies around the world. You're going to see amazing things. It's almost like seeing the Matrix for the first time. You can go, wow, there it is, and now I can see where they're going and what they're doing. The second thing that you're going to do is possibly make some really good life decisions with any type of property that you do own, and that means possibly even buying some Bitcoin. You know, a little's going to go a long way in the future. And lastly, it's going to make you a happier person. And I will tell you from experience, when I started focusing more on Bitcoin and less on politics and what was going on in the everyday, man, my spirits were like, wow, these people are awesome. These people are working together. These people come from every background, socioeconomic class, you name it. That gave me some hope. It made me smile. And what I have learned from you four gentlemen, the vast people from Cafe Bitcoin that have been out there and all over this Bitcoin universe, has been nothing short of a miracle. I mean, think about this, guys. I mean, for a Marine that's used to eating crayons to be able to do this kind of stuff is a testament to the community and that community pushing forward. So that's my challenge to everybody who's within the sound of our voice. Pay more attention to Bitcoin in all aspects of your life than you do politics for the 2024 election. And I guarantee you, if you decide not to pull the lever for somebody on that ballot in the primaries or in the general election, you may actually just feel better about yourself. You may walk out of there feeling freer because you didn't give your name to some schlub that got half of what they wanted out of you, right? And that's really, that is a freeing aspect. It is one of the things that hopefully, if this show is doing it for you, if Bitcoin's making you think freer and act freer, maybe you'll start creating more freedom in your own life. And I think that's where this is where it really comes home, is those people who can create freedom, create independence in their own life and in their own little societies and their neighborhoods and everything else. That's how you create an independent people that are not going to be ruled by anybody else. So I guess with all that being said, this is Bitcoin Veterans. We are on every week, returning to 9 p.m. hopefully soon after vacations are over. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell the service members, tell all the veterans that are out there. Spread this like wildfire. We appreciate the hell out of everybody who's been with us since the beginning. We are going to grow this thing as just fast and big and gnarly as possible. And I really appreciate everybody that's out there taking their time. Gentlemen, Mike, Jordan, Alex, Gabe, thank you guys again for your enlightenment, your laughs, man. Really appreciate it. Until next week, ladies and gents, we'll see you then. Bitcoin, don't shitcoin.
Yeah, and if we ever lose the internet, stack bullets.
And this is where we have the best conversation in the world, right now, after we tune out. See you guys.
I don't know why Shane gave himself